Good afternoon, ET enthusiasts. My name is Malika Noko, and I am a dissertator at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'm in Chris Kucharik's laboratory group. And the title of my talk is Using High-Resolution Remote Sensing, Lysimetry, and Big Leaf Modeling to Infer Crop Water Use in the Wisconsin Central Sands. Or as I like to call this talk, ET Three Ways. So here's the plan for today, the next 15 minutes at least. I'm going to share some context with all of you about the Wisconsin Central Sands and our ET challenges. And I would like to talk about the methods that I use, three complementary ET methods or experiments, some results and some of my interpretation, and also the next steps that I have planned. So the Wisconsin Central Sands is in the middle of the state, and it's one of the northern Great Lakes states of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And within these northern Great Lakes states, we are very partial to our surface waters. So I feel kind of silly almost coming up after a speaker from the Ogallala Aquifer who spoke about water scarcity to tell you that we have water scarcity problems in the Midwest. But that's what I'm going to do. We have water scarcity problems in the Midwest. And the reason I can say this is water scarcity is different from water depletion. Water scarcity has social values incorporated into the term. And in the Midwest, our surface waters are very important to our culture, and we derive ecosystem services from these surface waters. And in the Central Sands, over the past 50 years, we've gone from having one high-capacity well to having over 3,000 high-capacity wells. And our lakes and our streams have been drying up. So what does this mean as an ET scientist? These types of irrigation problems and also their solution really require better spatio-temporal estimates of ET. And to do that, you have to use multiple methods because you have temporal ET specifically for us in the shoulder season, so in the fall and in the spring, we have some uncertainty. Also, for precision irrigation solutions, we require greater spatio-temporal and spatial estimates of ET. And the uncertainty in our ET estimates from many different types of methods, and I'm not sure if this is something that's occurring in other regions, I'm sure it is, are leading to uncertainty in our policy because different stakeholders are grasping on to different methods, the ones that give them the estimates that they like the best, and using different types of ET estimates to further their own political gain. So it's very important for us as ET scientists to characterize uncertainty and to understand different types of methods. The picture that I have right here is a picture that kind of encapsulates what irrigation looks like in the northern Great Lakes states. Because as you can see, we have this is a potato field, and there's a center pivot running, and there's a storm coming. So in the northern Great Lakes states, irrigation and any improvements to our problems and better water management will come from better managing our incoming rain, because P is greater than ET, generally speaking, in the northern Great Lakes states. So here are the three methods that I used. And in the interest of time, I did not put up any equations. but I would like to go through them in a little bit of detail. So the first is passive capillary wick lysimetry. And in this method, just like other lysimetry methods, you use a water balance to calculate ET. So we have a measurement of precipitation and irrigation coming in. You use soil moisture sensors, that's what I used, to interpolate the changes in storage. And you measure drainage going out. And ET is the remaining term, and it therefore is going to encapsulate all of the uncertainty in the other terms that you're measuring. The second method is the high-resolution ET mapping algorithm. This is a relatively new algorithm. It was developed in 2014. And basically, it involves using aerial imagery to get a snapshot of ET over a field. And the variables that vary with space are canopy surface temperature, leaf area index, and height. And the way in which this particular method solves for ET, it's an energy balance method. And I have to thank the previous speaker for doing a great job of reviewing the energy balance for us. But you iteratively solve for sensible heat flux out in this particular method. And through that, you solve for latent heat flux at each pixel. So this gives us a high spatial resolution estimate of ET. And then the third method I'm hoping that many in this room are familiar with is the Shuttleworth-Wallace method. Yes, I see heads nodding. And this method is also an energy balance approach, and it partitions the canopy to estimate evaporation from the soil and also ET from the crops. And it kind of builds on some of the shortcomings of the Penman-Monteith method in that it is useful when a canopy isn't full to have an understanding of ET. So here's my experimental site. I worked with a sixth-generation farm in the Wisconsin Central Sands, and I instrumented six different fields. So I placed four passive capillary wick lysimeters on a field. And near each pair of fields, because the fields are kind of in pairs, as you can see, there's a met station. And each field is outlined because that is actually the thermal imaging domain, the flight domain that we used for the HERMIT, our high-resolution ET mapping algorithm. I'm going to refer to it as HERMIT from now onwards. So here's kind of the passive capillary wick lysimetry setup. These particular lysimeters have a constant head boundary, and I installed them below the root zone. So we're calculating drainage and measuring drainage at 1.4 meters. For those of you that have worked with equilibrium tension lysimeters, or also with passive capillary wick lysimeters, you'll maybe know that if you're going to close the water budget and estimate ET using this type of lysimetry, you cannot really do it on a day-to-day basis because you are limited by drainage events. And you have to, so weekly estimates are really what you can get from these types of lysimetry. So a little bit of information about HERMIT. As I mentioned, the three variables that are changing with space or varying in space are canopy surface temperature, multiband derived EVI, or enhanced vegetative index. And what I actually did in this case is I used the EVI estimates from our multiband camera to create a nonlinear regression, because the relationships are typically nonlinear between EVI, or also with NDVI, and LAI and height. And based on our flying altitude, this results in about a 2 meter pixel size. The second input, or I guess group of inputs, are just inputs from a met station, and since we had a few of those, it would be wind, radiation, temperature, and also vapor pressure. And the third kind of group of inputs are soil and crop emissivity, and crop and soil albedo. And I have underlined soil albedo just because I want everybody here to remember that soil albedo in this particular model is not spatially explicit, because it will be important in a few minutes. So here is an example, I guess, of my lysimetry results. I wanted to point out these particular results because it kind of leads to why HERMIT is important. So these are weekly results from 2015, and the crops grown in the Central Sands are kind of very common crops from the Central Sands: potatoes, sweet corn, field corn, and then peas. And just notice I have evapotranspiration in this top plot and recharge and also precipitation on the lower plot. And as I mentioned, evapotranspiration encapsulates the uncertainty of all of the water budget variables that you're using to calculate it when you use lysimetry. So the standard deviation is lower because I only have three met stations measuring precipitation. So the uncertainty of the precipitation measurements are kind of hidden when you think about it, because I'm not measuring that spatially. But if you look at the recharge estimates, you'll see that there's actually quite a bit of variability and uncertainty in my recharge estimates. And when I looked at that, and that particular relationship across my six fields, there is actually a kind of a counterintuitive relationship between recharge and the soil texture. Relatively finer parts of the field have greater recharge, which is counterintuitive for me, and I think for most people. So when I look at one particular map, of one field, so field A, Hermit results, you can see that actually there is some variability, spatial variability, on this particular field. And the variability in leaf area index, this is a lower leaf area index that I'm signifying, and the variability in canopy surface temperature actually do translate to a lower instantaneous evapotranspiration rate. And the question would be, what does this mean and how could this be useful? So when I compare my Hermit results from that particular date to Shuttleworth Wallace estimates, which I didn't really talk about because we were familiar with that, and in this particular case, I use Shuttleworth Wallace to validate the Hermit model. So as the flights were taking place and collecting data, we stood at four different spots and took measurements of surface soil moisture and also conductance using perometry. And Hermit is running a little bit higher than Shuttleworth Wallace. I have a crowdsourced question here. So I'm curious because I know that the reason, and I guess I hypothesized that the reason that Hermit is running higher than Shuttleworth Wallace is because the LAI and the height that I have built a regression using my EVI and LAI and height values that I've measured over the field, those values are running high. And I think that the reason is that I built this nonlinear regression or relationship based on what I've seen in the literature, which is over the course of the whole field season, I built a relationship. But I'm kind of wondering, for this particular context, would it be better to use a single flight in the spatial estimates of LAI that I've collected to build this regression, as opposed to using an entire field season and maybe missing the value and being further away from it for a particular instant in time? So that, if you have any comments on that, please come see me. I'd love to hear some insight. So the next steps in this particular project is I want to incorporate spatial soil albedo data into the Hermit model. So this is just a Google image of the map of the field that I had shown you. Look at the top of the field and also remember the leaf area index image. This is very dark soil, and I don't think that it is necessarily indicative of the spatial differences in ET to not be including soil albedo as a spatial estimate of this field when I run a spatially explicit model like Hermit. And the field that Hermit was developed and validated on did not have this type of variability in terms of soil color. So this is kind of my, once again, I'm looking for feedback. I have an idea for how to incorporate spatial soil albedo into the Hermit model. And this is a soil map, actually an apparent electrical conductivity map of the field. And I've divided it up into different management zones based on apparent soil electrical conductivity. And I've taken soil samples at all of these points. And these are actually the same points that I use to validate leaf area index and height for each flight. What I'm thinking that I could do is use a spectrometer at each of these points and measure relative reflectance, and then use this map to generate a soil albedo map and then incorporate it in my model. That's my game plan. And as I said, if anyone has any feedback on that, I would greatly appreciate it. So summary, we talked about the science and policy context for using multiple evapotranspiration methods in the Wisconsin Central Sands, a little bit about how there is water scarcity in the Midwest, even though there's not water depletion. We discussed life symmetry, the Hermit method, and also the Shuttleworth Wallace method, and how they can be used for complementary information about evapotranspiration. And I shared some results from Hermit and talked about how it could be useful in a precision irrigation type of context. And I want to point out that you could also use it in conjunction with life symmetry for weighted water budgets if you have an understanding of the spatial relationships of a field. But it also may benefit and be improved by using spatially explicit inputs of soil albedo. Thank you very much, and if I have time, I'd love to take some questions.
Do you have time for one quick question?
You have 3 minutes,
Yes. Oh, what was that? No, actually, so that's actually an excellent question. In the Wisconsin Central Sands, we are assuming that there is no runoff. So when I do my water budget measurement, the soil is so sandy. It's about 80 to 90% sand. So we feel that this is a safe assumption in the Central Sands. However, there is subsurface runoff. So some of my lysimeters, I am having difficulty, and this is something to note if anybody uses any sort of open system, in that you can have subsurface flow convergence and then have trouble closing the water budget and calculating evapotranspiration. It's an issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.